Over the 4th of July weekend, catastrophic floods in the Texas Hill Country killed at least 135 people, according to AP News. What causes such catastrophic floods, and what can we do in the future to reduce the loss of life and property? That's what we'll be talking about on this episode of the GeoTrek Podcast. Hey everyone, I'm Hurricane Hal, host of the GeoTrek Podcast. On the GeoTrek Podcast, we explore the world to bring you stories about extreme weather and natural disasters not covered by the mainstream media. Please like, follow, and subscribe our content. Your support of our channels will help us mark professional progress, ensuring many more episodes of the GeoTrek Podcast in the future. On this episode of the GeoTrek Podcast, we have a special guest, Alex Garcia, chief meteorologist at Fox 29 TV in San Antonio. Alex has extensive experience forecasting weather in Central Texas, and he's an expert on extreme weather conditions in the Hill Country. He actually created a mini documentary on the Guadalupe River. He's going to join us to explain some interesting insights into the special landscape of the Hill Country that exacerbate flooding, how we can be better prepared for these floods, and what we can do in the future to better communicate flood risk to reduce the loss of life and property. Alex, thank you so much for taking time to come on the GeoTrek Podcast.
Oh, no problem, Hal. Enjoying it.
Alex, we're talking today about the catastrophic Hill Country floods. I mean, just such a fresh catastrophe. It's unimaginable in some ways. You've done a lot of work in San Antonio and the Texas Hill Country. Could you help us understand the context? I mean, how do we get such horrific floods in the Texas Hill Country? What are the factors that lead to that?
Well, it's a complex thing. I mean, there's a lot of factors both on the ground and in the air that kind of lead into that. If we just start topography-wise, you know, we're leading up, we're going up in elevation all the way up into Kerrville. And so Kerrville sits about the highest place there is. And then you look at the type of topography, you've got karst limestone that's sitting there. And so that's not really conducive to soaking in a lot of water. So when you do get a lot of rain, it runs off a lot quicker. And the rivers are in, for lack of a better term, concrete channels cut into that limestone. And so they come down there, and it's like a really quick rush downstream, downhill. And so that is one of the big things that really comes together. Atmospheric-wise, whenever this happens, we usually have tropical moisture in the air. We either get a leftover tropical system or there's a tropical system coming onshore. And in this case and in other cases, it's multiple remnants of tropical systems that just end up in this one spot.
Alex, let's start by talking about the soils. This is fascinating. So it sounds like you're saying if this was a coastal plain and we could put a shovel in the ground and get a really big layer of soil, the runoff would be very different than the hard limestone of the Texas Hill Country.
Very, very different. In fact, when this water from the Guadalupe or anything comes down from the Hill Country and flows here into San Antonio, it's in those little tight channels north of San Antonio. But as soon as it gets down into the city proper, it spreads out and just goes everywhere. The last time we had a big flood on the Guadalupe, it was 7 miles wide south of town.
That's fascinating. So, and I'd imagine in the channels northwest of San Antonio in the Hill Country, it can't spread out. So it's really funneled, and the water must be moving incredibly fast.
Very fast, incredibly fast. So when you stop and think about how much horsepower, how much pressure that water's having, even if it's only, let's say, 4 feet deep and about 4 feet wide, that's thousands upon thousands of pressure of water pushing forward if it's moving about 10 miles an hour. Speed that up to 20 to 30 miles an hour, and that just multiplies exponentially.
Alex, a lot of times we'll see flash flood watches out for the entire Hill Country. And then as the weather system develops, we'll notice smaller areas with a flash flood warning. So the fact that the rivers are very channelized, what kind of challenge does that present? Because we don't know exactly where that bullseye of 15 or 20 inches of rain is going to be. It could be in one location, or it could be 20 miles farther east. And I'd imagine with channelized rivers, if you change that bullseye of heavy rain 10 or 20 miles, you could probably completely change the flood pattern, right?
Oh, absolutely. 20 miles either way, even 10 miles either way, and you're going to change the pattern of what happens. You'll change the impact dramatically.
Well, and I noticed in this previous catastrophe, there were flood watches out, but again, we just didn't know the bullseye. And I'd imagine the weather models, probably it's outside their capability to really show you where that bullseye is going to be. Let me ask you it this way. What kind of lead time do you need to really know where that bullseye is going to be? I mean, can you forecast that, or is that almost now casting as it's happening?
That's now casting. I mean, that's all that is. That's now casting. It's very difficult to pinpoint where a bullseye would be. There's a lot of people that think, you know, I can tell them it's going to rain in their backyard, 5 inches of rain at 4 o'clock in the afternoon on such and such date. We don't have the tools possible to do that, but we do have the tools possible to tell us that all those ingredients are coming together and that it's going to happen somewhere in this broad zone. And that's why that flash, it's not more of a flash flood watch. It was more of a flood watch was issued. So that told us, yeah, we're getting the remnants of two of these big tropical systems in here. The triggering mechanisms are there. The low is spinning around. It's all setting up. We just can't tell you exactly where it's going to happen.
I've had some recent conversations with people where we've compared weather forecasting to traffic forecasting. We've all been in rush hour gridlock in San Antonio or Dallas or Houston. And you can say, you know, the factors are coming together late Friday afternoon. There's going to be gridlock. The chance of there being wrecks when you have thousands of cars trying to merge and people are impatient, the chance of a bad accident goes up. But a traffic model could not tell you exactly where an accident's going to happen, right? It's just showing you that you're becoming more likely that you'll find it somewhere, right?
Yeah, it's the probability. The probability goes up. The chance goes up. And that's what most people have to understand, that weather is probabilistic. In other words, you've got chances. We can't be specific, but we can tell you the risk is a little greater in this area than it is in this other area.
Alex, you helped produce a mini documentary on the Guadalupe River and really understanding the weather and the geography and geology and the meteorology of the Texas Hill Country. Could you take us back? And we know that there have been a lot of floods through time and we see some of these patterns repeating. What did you share in this documentary and what did we learn about, say, the flood history for this region?
Well, the flood history goes back hundreds of years. It's always happened all the way back into records. The Guadalupe River itself starts from a little small area just north of Kerrville and flows downward from that point on. And if you go back to the archives and look at all the 20-inch bullseyes in that area, it's covered with them. Mm-hmm. Go back 50 years and you can see there's all of these bullseyes and a lot of them associated, again, with tropical systems that come down. And so this has been going on forever, all the way back into the 1800s when the records were there. And then you try and look at some of the archived records or mentions of floods, and you can still see those mentions going way back.
So it sounds like the pattern here with tropical remnants and seeing this magnitude of a 20-inch bullseye rain, it sounds like for you looking back at the deeper history, it's not maybe shocking or unprecedented, just the fact that there was a 20-inch rain bullseye in the Hill Country.
Right. A lot of people were saying, has this ever happened before? And all I have to do is show them the archive. This is nothing new to the area. You know, and I think what really makes it difficult is that we've had a lot of people that have moved into this place. And they've been here a long enough time or a short enough time, I should say, that they haven't seen one of these big floods. They've kind of heard about it, and they've seen some of the smaller ones that come through, but they've never seen one like this. I can remember 1987, I can remember 2004, 2007, 2017. It just goes and goes. And what's really interesting is, and I'm doing some research, is to go back and see how this ties in to either La Niña, El Niño, or the neutral phase. And right now we're in the neutral phase. So I'm going to go back and look at all these neutral phases and see if I can connect these 20-inch bullseyes to these neutral phases. And if that's the case, that kind of gives us a heads up. Maybe this year something like this could happen.
Oh, that's fascinating, Alex. Again, Alex here talking about La Nina, El Nino, really one of these teleconnections that relate to the sea surface temperatures in the equatorial Pacific. And we know in other areas of climate and weather that there's a connection between El Nino, La Nina with what's happening in the Gulf or the tropical Atlantic. That'd be fascinating if we could tie that in with Texas Hill Country floods. Like you said, it would at least kind of tip the hand and give us an indication that something's a little more likely.
Exactly. Anything that kind of tips the hand, gives us a heads up, whatever, to let us know that this could be one of those years. And again, it's a could be, not it will be.
Alex, you brought up a really important point. The population growth in Central Texas has been tremendous. And then this area in the Hill Country, especially in the summertime on weekends, in the case of the more recent catastrophe, it was 4th of July weekend. We're drawing in thousands and thousands of people to float rivers and enjoy recreation. Some of them coming from other parts of Texas, some of them coming from Oklahoma, Kansas, surrounding states. It seemed like a lot of people were in harm's way, unfortunately, when this catastrophe hit.
Yes, that's what made it, that kind of made it worse, because we had so many people from out of town in a very small area within that area of the river, because of all the camps and all the other recreational things that were there. Plus, downstream, all the way into New Braunfels, there's a lot of recreational areas there as well. So we had a huge number of people. So the impact was multiplied.
Alex, we know that there were flood watches ahead of time, and then flood warnings were issued. I've just, a lot of the dialogue has focused on communication. How can we better communicate flood risk or the risk of extreme weather? What are your thoughts on that? Like, how can we maybe make improvements or better communicate if an event like this happens again in the future?
You know, I've had that discussion with a lot of different people over the years in relations to hurricanes. We talk about hurricane watches and warnings, and generally we've talked also about watches and warnings. I think we do a good job of getting it out there. We put out the watch. We put out the warning. We take time to explain that a watch simply means you're getting ready for this thing. And by the time we issue the warning, it's already happening. I think we've done a good job there. So the other side of that, there's two sides to that coin. The other side of that coin is, okay, now I have received the watch. What do I do with it? Do I act? Do I wait? Do I try and verify? A lot of people, what we've found talking to researchers and people in the social media field, they find that people receive information. Then they want to verify it. So at this point, things kind of go off the rails. Because for you and I, as professionals in this business, if I get a watch or a warning, I want to verify it with the National Weather Service.
Sure.
I want to make sure that's accurate. Unfortunately, people don't do that. A lot of people don't go directly to the Weather Service to verify it. They go with someone who is familiar to them.
I see. So they might be reaching out to a cousin or their grandma or someone that may or may not really have credible knowledge about the situation at hand. And that's who they're going to maybe take advice from on making a life-altering decision.
Exactly. That is exactly what they do. They go to that person, and if that person does not have the qualifications or even the knowledge that something's happening, they're going to get advice that could be deadly for them. The other side of that, and divide that in half, is that I get it, but you know, I've been through this before. I think we can survive this. Let's not worry about it. And I ignore it. So those are the two things that we're looking at. We can deliver that information, but once we deliver it, it's up to the receiver to do the right thing or to do something with it.
Yeah, and Alex, that gets back to you talking about the explosive population growth, right? I mean, how many millions of people have moved to Texas since 1987? And they say, oh, we've been under flood watches before. We've survived right. It. I know what's going to happen. That concept that the new event may be magnitudes higher than what they've seen before, that's kind of outside our frame of reference as humans, right?
Yeah, very much so. I mean, all the people that were there, and we're listening to a lot of the discussions you always get, we never thought it was going to be this bad, or we've never seen it this bad. But there were people who were there who had never seen a flood, and they were totally blown away by the magnitude and the speed at which it occurred.
Let's talk a little bit about the speed. I've heard these phenomenal rates of water rise. I mean, how quickly did the water come up?
It came up incredibly fast. The action window, as we call it, from the moment you know something's happening to where you've got to do some work and get out of harm's way, roughly about 30 minutes.
Wow. So if you're going to take an hour or two and verify this with your friends and family, you've just lost your window.
Exactly. If you even take one half a minute to try and verify, it's too late. And that's what a lot of people did. They got that flash flood warning, flooding emergency. They had exactly 30 minutes or maybe a little more to get out of harm's way. But they spent half of that trying to verify likely.
Yeah, that is fascinating. And it really is a call to action that we have to be vigilant, right? You have to be ready to respond immediately. And I wanted to ask about this. We heard, unfortunately, about a lot of fatalities of people being washed away in vehicles. So I wanted to ask about this. When you're trying to get away from flash flooding, in some cases, would it be better if you have topography near you just to climb up a hill or just to do this on foot instead of getting in a car? I mean, how do we think about that in a place like the Texas Hill Country?
I think that was one of the big things that a lot of the people who were in charge of evacuations thought about. But then again, that window was so small, they were like, if we try to evacuate people now, we're just going to send them in harm's way because that topography is full of low water crossings everywhere. So the better thing would be to get to higher ground quickly. In other places like here in Northern Bear County, you get a flash flood warning, you can get out of the way, but there you really don't have that window of opportunity to do that.
So it sounds like really people need to be responsible to have situational awareness, especially if they're in by a river. I'm thinking Texas over through New Mexico, Arizona, Utah. You see a lot of these canyons. A lot of these areas have very steep topography. You could maybe get up on foot. It sounds like you're saying in some cases that may be a safer option than trying to drive away from the flood.
Exactly, because what you'll end up doing is you may get to a low water crossing and you're cut off, or you can't get through it, and it's more dangerous to try to get through it. So you've wasted your time doing that when you could have been going to higher ground instead.
Alex, if someone is in a vehicle, they see water up ahead washing over the roadway, how deep does that water have to be to wash a vehicle off the road?
6 inches.
Six Not even inches that. Of water. So I'm looking up ahead and I'm seeing the water is only 1 to 2 feet deep. I think I can make it. It sounds like you're saying not necessarily.
Not necessarily. It depends on the speed of the water. And again, that depends on how much push that water has. So speed has a lot to do with it. Depth has a lot to do with it and width. So if you're trying to cross something that's really wide, even though it's only 6 inches deep, but if that water's moving at about 15 or 20 miles an hour, you're gone. And that includes a big 18-wheeler. It doesn't take much. You just have more room, more pressure with that longer vehicle. It'll take it off just as well.
Alex, you've given me a different perspective. I've been in a lot of flood zones doing field work, and I can recall a lot of times where I'm seeing 6 inches of water just trickling over a road, just a very, very low flow. It sounds like you're saying that risk might be very different than if I'm in a canyon with 6 inches or 12 inches of water moving incredibly fast. It's a different force, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, totally different force. You pick that, you add the speed of the water and the depth and the width, then you're changing the equation really quick.
Alex, we're moving up on one of our favorite segments in the show called Weathered Wisdom. So for you personally, professionally, what's a weather event that stands out in your mind that you'll never forget? It could be something you covered professionally, something that happened to you just personally, but something either that Mother Nature surprised you or you thought, this is unbelievable. I'm never going to forget this.
Well, I have one event like that. It will quickly age me. I remember Hurricane Carla. I was in it. I was in Victoria when that big hurricane, which was almost a Category 5, came on shore.
Wow.
At Port Lavaca, Matagorda. And so Victoria is 27 miles on shore.
Victoria took a huge hit. I mean, so what are your memories from that? I mean, what did you see?
Oh, the things I saw. My dad did not realize the power of a hurricane. He did take us to an elementary school, which was two blocks away. I remember being in that elementary school as the hurricane was coming on shore. And of course, being a very young kid, we were told not to go to the windows and look out, but I had to go do that. And I remember seeing trash cans and cars being moved, pushed by the wind. I remember at one point in the middle of the night or some dark period, it seemed like night to me, where all the men came running into the big classroom where we were, and they asked for all the men to come immediately. We need you now. And many, I didn't know what that was, but many years later, I figured it out. They were holding the doors at the end of the school so that they wouldn't go away. They had them chained, but it needed everybody to hold the door so they wouldn't blow out.
So they were holding the door so they wouldn't blow out. As we know, if you get two doors blow out, all of a sudden you're
built gone.
And it's gone.
Yeah.
I didn't. Yeah. So, and they, it sounds like they did not tell the children what was up. They just said that adult men come to this area, and they were holding the doors in Hurricane Carla.
Yes. And this was before the eye came across. When the eye came across, it got all calm. And to this day, my dad says, okay, it's over. Let's go home. So we went home. And I spent the second half of that looking out my bedroom window and watching two very, very large trees get picked up and see a goodbye.
That's tremendous. For those for the listeners not familiar, what's strange to me about Carla, I mean, Category 4 hurricane winds, you don't want to mess with. They're incredibly violent. But then usually a Cat 4 hurricane tends to be more small and compact. Carla was geographically huge. You can't imagine a Cat 4 that's geographically huge. That was Carla, and you went through it in two locations, changing your location in the eye. This is tremendous.
Yeah, it was something you just don't forget.
In some ways, did that lead you on a path to meteorology, or were you already interested in the weather?
I was kind of already there, but this really cemented it really fast.
Yeah, this put it over the top, and I think it showed you probably the need, too, for accurate forecasting communication. Just back then, we did not have the technology we have today, and it sounds like there was maybe some confusion, not understanding you're in the eye and all these other fascinating...
Yeah, you know, that was the very first hurricane, I think, that actually got imaged by a black and white camera up on a satellite.
Oh, fantastic. We know here in Galveston, we have the first televised radar broadcast of a Hurricane Eye from Dan Rather, who was in the federal building here. I mean, we were just starting to see some of that emerging technology where we could see the size and the scale of that storm. Alex, thank you for sharing that memory with us. That is fantastic and an important thing to remember as we move into the heart of hurricane season here.
Absolutely.
Alex, back to talking about flash flooding, Texas Hill Country, the recent catastrophe. Where do we go from here? I mean, what steps can we take to better prepare ourselves to avoid any loss of life like this again in the future?
I think there's several things we could do. One of the most important ones, I think, is to look at the river gauges that we have along that river. That river is one of the longest rivers that we have here in the state of Texas, and there are very few flood gauges on it. So you can't warn what you can't see and what you can't measure. Up above Kerrville, there were just two or three river gauges. So we really need to have a lot more. We need to monitor that river all the way down. I believe we need to really take a look at putting some type of an alarm system up there that does work, either the sirens or not, not as a primary, but because people are going to likely ignore that too, but it's at least another element. If they get something on their app, if they get something on their phone, if they get something, then they hear the siren, that's a verification method. They don't have to spend that time trying to find out. They hear it. Oh, that's verified.
Alex, in the weather industry, we often talk about having at least two ways that people can receive credible, accurate information. Is that what you're talking about here, having, say, a siren that sort of supplements or complements what you're seeing on your smartphone, perhaps?
Exactly. Something that's going to be a quicker verification process than trying to get a hold of your neighbor or your best friend or something else. This tells you immediately what you're seeing on your phone, what you're getting on that app is real. Trust it.
Alex, some of my friends with the National Weather Service did some field work in the days after the Hill Country flood. And they said as they drove along different areas, especially where there was steep topography, often their cell phone signal was gone. And this was not because of the extreme weather event, just where you have canyon walls or hills and you're in the shadow of that, you may not have a cell phone signal. Let's talk about what happens. I mean, we're so used to using our smartphones. What happens if you're in a vulnerable area, but you have no smartphone signal?
We had a long discussion with that online with a few people. They were talking about the inability to use their phone because of that cell signal issue. And I had to remind them there is an old tech that's still in use. And they said, well, what's that? It's NOAA weather radio. There's a transmitter right there in Kerrville. They had no idea that NOAA weather radio even existed. So I think that points out that we need to do some educating here. Hey, you've got another method. You don't have to depend on that cell phone. Get a good old-fashioned weather radio and set it up. And that's a primary. And that siren becomes the verification for it. So those two things, I think, are important.
We often live 365 days a year where our cell phone's working. And there are different reasons why it might not. In this case, doing recreation in a remote area with topography, with canyons. Also, we've seen an evacuation gridlock where you have thousands of cars parked and they're overloading the signal. Your cell phone might not work. And also storms like hurricanes and windstorms can damage cell towers. So it seems like there's different reasons why your cell phone might crash in a disaster. Sounds like you're saying NOAA weather radio. That's not dependent on the cell signal, right?
No, not dependent on the cell signal at all. It's its own little radio transmitter on a special frequency, 162.12, I think. I might be off. But, you know, hey, that thing works. And you can go down and get one of these little weather radios, either at a local store or to order it online, and put that in there and enter your code so that it's just, you get just the warnings for you and you're good. That thing is working and it's loud. Trust me, it will wake you up. I have two of them, one downstairs and one upstairs. That thing will shake the windows.
So, Alex, so can you set an alarm on it? Like, so let's say you're asleep at night and you don't want to hear the text voice, you know, you don't want to hear the normal forecast read. But if there is an emergency, a watch or a warning, will that set off an alarm?
Yes, it sets up. It's programmable and it will sit there silently and just sit there until a warning is issued or a watch is issued, and it will go off and let you know something's happening.
Yeah.
If you have those, you've got that early warning.
No, that's exactly it. And like we said, people could still rely on their smartphone, but another version or an alternate that you have a backup, because again, your cell signal could drop for different reasons.
Exactly. That cell signal could drop or could go away completely, and you still have a direct connection to the important information that you need with a radio signal.
Alex, you do so much with weather forecasting and communication. I know our listeners are going to love this podcast and they're going to want to learn more about you. How can they find you online if people want to see some of the, you've not only forecasted weather, but you've done a lot to provide education from mini documentaries, things like that. How can people find you and your work?
Well, they can always find me where I work, which is at Fox San Antonio in San Antonio. They can find me on YouTube. Just look up Alex Garcia Weather and boom, I'll pop up. You'll see a lot of different mini documentaries that I've done over the past several years. And the Guadalupe is one of them. I take you back all the way to the history when it was first discovered by the Spaniards. And they called it the River of Nuts, because there was pecan trees everywhere.
I mean, that's fascinating. And that deep history, well, it's interesting and captivating, but it sounds like in this case, it also provides some really important information about past floods, that we've seen a lot of really severe floods in that part of the country.
Oh yeah, this is Flash Flood Alley, Flash Flood Capital of the World. And even some of the people in my newsroom did not realize that.
Alex, as we close out this podcast, what's one last message you'd want to leave with our listeners?
I would say always use a trusted source for weather information. And that's not TikTok and that's not social media. That's a direct connection. I don't care how you establish it to the National Weather Service. And if you can't establish that, establish it to your local forecaster on television.
Alex, thanks so much. That is becoming more and more relevant advice every year as we're seeing viral forecasts out there that are often so inaccurate and causing more confusion. Sounds like you're saying stay tuned to the National Weather Service, National Hurricane Center, and your trusted local meteorologist.
Absolutely. All this other stuff that's out there, just let it go by.
Alex, thanks so much for taking time to come on the podcast. We're excited to continue watching your forecast and the science education that you're putting out there, helping everybody be aware of natural disasters and extreme weather.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Well, Alex, thank you so much for coming on the podcast and sharing your insights. There's a lot to unpack here. I really got three main things out of this podcast. Number one, Alex mentioned that because of the limestone rock in the hill country, water can flow incredibly fast. It cannot really spread out like across farmland. And he mentioned that those fast flows can actually sweep a vehicle off the road if there's only 6 inches of flowing water. I thought I previously remembered people talking about needing 18 inches of flowing water, but what I did not account for is the speed of the flow. Where you have faster flowing water, less water can push a vehicle off the roadway. I didn't realize as little as 6 inches of very fast flowing water could sweep that vehicle away. So that's something to keep in mind. Also, I actually spent time in the Texas Hill Country after the flood and did some field surveys. And what hit me was exactly what Alex said about these tight channels of limestone. And not only will that make the water flow faster, it'll make it flow higher. I was sitting by some rivers and creeks that were tranquil. They had low flows. It was a very calm, peaceful evening. I'm looking up in trees and seeing debris 30 feet in the air. It was hard for me to imagine that just a short time before, this was a raging wall of water that was taking lives and property. So things can change quickly where you have a rocky landscape like in the Texas Hill Country. The number two take-home point for me was knowing our history. Alex mentioned that if you know the deep history of the Texas Hill Country, you see a lot of these 20-inch rain bombs over time. We have an explosive population growth in Central Texas and a lot of visitors. So a lot of people visiting the Hill Country did not realize that this area is prone to flooding. This can be especially difficult for people to imagine, and it can blindside us because this area of the country also is perpetually very dry and has long-term droughts. So when you're in this dry landscape, sometimes it's hard to imagine that you could have such a raging flood. But the deep history says this is fairly common in this part of the country. Some people call it Flash Flood Alley. So know your history. That will help protect you and help to keep you from being blindsided. Number three, I think this is so important. We talked on the podcast about having multiple ways to receive weather watch and warnings. And Alex mentioned that your cell phone can go out. In parts of the hill country, the topography or the hillsides are so steep that you may not be able to receive a cell phone signal. We know this can happen in other areas of the country as well. If you're remote or if you're, say, near a mountain, sometimes you're not receiving those cell phone signals. And if that's what you're relying for your weather watches and warnings, you could be really in silence when you really need a watch or a warning. And so he mentioned having NOAA weather radio. That's coming on a radio frequency. You do not need a cell phone signal to get your NOAA weather radio. They will keep you updated 24 hours a day with accurate weather forecasts from the National Weather Service. And they even have an alarm feature that can wake you up in the middle of the night if flash flooding or another weather emergency threatens your location. Alex, thank you again so much for coming on the podcast. You covered a very timely issue that's been catastrophic. A lot of us really have been emotionally affected by these floods. In a very calm and easygoing manner, you were able to direct us to the best knowledge and the best information that's very credible to help us understand these floods and help us protect ourselves from more floods and natural disasters like this in the future. So thank you so much for coming on the podcast. Thank you so much for our listeners for supporting us and making us a top podcast on the topic of natural disasters. And of course, our GeoTrek team, we always thank Jeremiah Long for doing all the magic behind the scenes, editing and mixing the podcast to make it sound so professional. And Seneth Baker as well is always involved in providing leadership for our podcast and helping us make important decisions. Thanks so much for tuning in, and I'll catch you on the next episode of the GeoTrek Podcast.